skies for amber. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Suzanne Vinker, and we're going to be talking about her book, Seven Myths of Working Mothers. Suzanne, are you there?
I'm here.
Well, thank you so very much for being with us this afternoon, Election Eve. But I think your book is important. And, you know, of course, I'm doing a study on population control and of course, the various forces that have been at work and trying to convince women, American women, they just shouldn't have children. And everything has been really done over a period of almost half a century to discourage women, first from having children, and then, of course, if they're going to have them, taking care of them. Women are told they're supposed to be out there working and competing with men and being just like men. And of course, you know, that's the only way a woman's going to find fulfillment, and he certainly wouldn't want to be at home looking after children. And, of course, your book takes exactly the opposite point of view. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and why you are so much in favor of a mother staying at home and looking after her children?
Okay. Well, I am a 36-year-old mother of two. I have a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old. I live in St. Louis, Missouri, if we don't know that. The basic premise of my book is that raising children is in itself a full-time job, a bona fide career, an actual job with responsibilities like any other, and as such, it cannot be combined with another full-time career at the same time. Now, of course, there are many things to discuss with respect to that premise, but like, for example, I never say in the book that mothers can't work at all during the course of the years that they're at home with their children, but I do stress the significance of finding work that you can do around your children's needs and schedules. So that's the basic premise of the book. It's obviously a very controversial stance to take, and I'm very concerned about this move away from the idea that mothers have historically been in the workforce for financial reasons when they are there, and that has come to basically be eradicated and have it be an issue of entitlement, and that is my biggest concern. So my book really addresses mostly the middle-class, college-educated women who are opting out of being at home with their children in order to continue with their careers. That's really my target audience.
And of course, you know, I'm twice as old as you are, Suzanne. Mm-hmm. So I can remember when it used to be commonplace for women to be at home. That was where they were supposed to be. There, they were supposed to be taking care of the children and raising the children. And then something happened about 50 years ago that all that began to change. So we're going to be back here in just a couple of minutes with our special guest, Suzanne Vinker, and we're going to talk about really this transformation of society and this whole idea that, a woman couldn't be fulfilled unless she was out competing in the workforce, and of course, you wanted, of course, to find a good daycare where you could leave your children, and then you could come home and see them for a little while in the evening. And, of course, it's Suzanne's contention that, of course, raising children is a full-time job. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and, of course, our guest is Suzanne Vinker, and we're talking about her book, The Seven Myths of working mothers. So, Suzanne, now we've just brought a whole flock of new stations on board. So why don't you sort of introduce yourself again? Because the other people have left us. They'll be back in about 3 minutes.
Okay.
Go ahead. Just repeat what you said before.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm a 36-year-old mother of two. I have two. My children are 4 and 1. And the major point in the book, Seven Myths of Working Mothers, is that raising children is a full-time job of its own. And because of that, because of its duties and responsibilities and all the work that goes into raising decent, confident, healthy, intelligent human beings, we cannot perform another full-time job alongside that work. Which is not to say that there are not moments throughout the years that you're at home that you can do some other type of work if you choose, as long as you're doing it around the needs and schedules of your children. So, for example, the first 5 years of your life is going to be very different from the years after they've begun school, for example. And we need to be flexible and creative in finding ways to fit other work in around that primary obligation. But the major premise of the book is that I'm very concerned about this, as you put it a moment ago, societal transformation that has occurred over the last 30 or 40 years.
I don't know if you saw this CBS documentary, or maybe it was about 2 months ago, about working women. These women held key positions, you know, in Fortune 500 companies, and they gave up these wonderful jobs to be mothers, you know, and you could just see, I've forgotten which one.
Leslie Stahl. Right, and it Leslie was actually, Stahl.
How could you possibly do that? I mean, you know, how could you betray, I mean, give up all this just for this lowly job of being a mother? And I thought, you know, these were well-educated women. These were, you know, the top of their class at major universities, and they'd all decided that being a mother was more important.
Well, there's no, actually, it was just a couple of weeks ago, actually, not a couple of months ago, believe it or not, and it was Leslie Stahl, and I did do an interview with a local station here on that very 60 Minutes episode, and you're absolutely right. Leslie Stahl looked at them as though they had three heads and wanted to know what on earth they were thinking. And, of course, that's very telling. That doesn't anger me so much as it's just proof of where we are and how far we've come to the point where just even doing it, being at home with children, that is so shocking that it requires explanation. You know, that's what's so concerning to me.
Well, I think that there's been a total transformation of society. Held on to your thought there for just a moment, as our other stations. Well, Dr. Stan back here, I guess this afternoon, is Suzanne Vinker. We're talking about her book, The Seven Myths of Working Mothers. It's published by Spence Publishers, who's one of my favorite publishing houses, mainly because they always send me the brochures, and then they say, send me copies of the book, and they put out some very, very provocative books, and this is a provocative book, mainly because where in all of history has there ever been a society where women were discouraged from taking care and rearing their children? Only here in America in the last 50 years has this really been a factor. Before that, women were expected, and they wanted to be at home. They wanted to take care of their children. This is something that was part of their very, very makeup. Women are different than men, and, of course, they are caring, and they're really cherishing, and of course, the child needs that care from the mother. And, of course, over this last 50 years or so, why suddenly this has been demeaned. So you pick up the story about the feminists and all the things you talk about in your book and how our society really was transformed.
Yeah, well, you're hitting the nail on the head. This is not, you know, today we like to talk about it as though it were this big catfight between stay-at-home moms and working moms. People are missing the point entirely. That's not the point. That's just not the issue. We have had, as you say, a societal transformation that is absolutely huge. And that is, as you say, this move away from the understanding that children need their mommies and that they are expected and responsible for raising the children that they bring into the world. We've moved away from that and on to the idea that women are entitled to have children and pay other people to raise them for them. And that is a far cry from anything we've experienced in history, as you say, because the issue is not, have there never been mothers in the workforce before? Of course there have. But they were there mostly because of financial circumstances that forced them there. They didn't choose to be there. They had to, from whatever those circumstances were. So today, that is no longer the case. It is simply understood that it is your choice and your right as a woman to have children and pay a daycare or nanny to do that work for you so that you may continue in the workforce. And that is where I come in, I guess you would say, because the book Seven Myths of Working Mothers is challenging that. And, of course, people want to simplify this issue and say that, oh, well, it's just a matter of whether or not you believe that mothers should work or shouldn't. And it's just simply not that simple. It's much more complicated. So that's what I try to address in the book.
All right.
So,
now, what are these seven myths that I've used to justify, oh, my goodness, a woman has to be out competing in the workforce and being a great success in the workforce?
Well, what we did was we took the major, I guess, statements that you would hear that are kind of bantered around among 20, 30, 40-something women today regarding this issue, which is the first one has to do with having it all. The title is, Men Can Have It All, Why Shouldn't We? That idea, or that statement, that actual statement, was taken from Marlo Thomas from the 1970s, who was arguing the point that women should be able to live like men and, quote-unquote, have it all. And what I do in that first chapter is debunk that whole concept that men ever did have it all. They do not have it all. They've never had it all. They have been entirely myopic, largely, over the years in their obligation, I should say, to work for their families. And as such, by being the breadwinner, they have not had the experience and the rewards that the traditional mother has in being the primary force in their children's lives. They really engage in what I call in the book peripheral parenting, which is really what working mothers are doing today, is it not?
Right.
I mean, there really is no difference. So, interestingly enough, we were complaining 30 years ago that men were not as involved in their children's lives as they should be, and I agree with that and talk at length, I think, in the book about how important fatherly involvement is. However, what we ended up doing, really, was just joining men in the workforce and becoming the traditional breadwinner father, rather than getting more people involved in the workforce, at home, to understand the significance and the amount of work that goes into raising children, which is kind of the irony of the whole women's movement.
And, of course, a lot of this started during the Second World War when we had a shortage of men, and so they began hiring women to do men's jobs in the factories. Rosie the Riveter, she was, of course, building Liberty ships so we could win the war against the wicked Adolf Hitler, and, of course, she became sort of the prototype of the modern woman. But, of course, you know, this is not what women really... God didn't mean for women to be out riveting, although they certainly can probably rivet as well as a man. Can.
Sure.
But of course, somebody has got to be home looking after those children, and this whole world has been turned upside down.
Well, you hit the nail on the head, because that's exactly the fear of feminism, the fear of feminists, I should say, and child care advocates today, is exactly what you just said, which is that, of course, women are capable of succeeding in the workforce as men are. We know that, we've proven that, and quite frankly, I don't think anybody doubted that. But that's got nothing to do with the fact that somebody, as you say, has got to rear the children. So no matter what you want to prove as far as our equality goes, it just doesn't have anything to do with our responsibility to our children. And that's what I try to lay out in the book, is that there's a very big difference between a woman's role or work should be in the home and a mother's work. See, I think there's a very big distinction there, and I don't think we're making that.
All right, fine. Now, what's the next myth? First one was men have it all,
yeah.
And what's the next one?
The second myth is I could never stay home full time.
All right.
And that is a statement and a belief that can only be felt if one has been brainwashed, really, if you think about it, because you would never say such a thing most women are saying this before they've ever been at home with children. So clearly they're getting the message that being at home with children full time means something negative or bad. Otherwise, why would you say that? So what I do in that chapter is lay out the myths that have been perpetuated by the media regarding what it's like to be home with children. Like, you waste your education, you lose your identity, and all of those things that that get bantered about. So I kind of go through those one by one to debunk them.
All right, and I think that really, of course, it's a wonderful opportunity to identify with those children, to bond with those children, for the children to bond with you. And the saddest child is the one who does not have a mother to bond with, and certainly a father. But the mother, in many respects, is by far the most important person in that child's life. And it's either going to be the mother or it's going to be some daycare worker. But somebody's going to have to raise that child.
Yeah, and that kind of jumps ahead to... I think it's myth number six, where I talk about this in daycare, this whole idea of what it is that children need in the first 3 years of life. And I truly, truly believe, I've come to the conclusion over my experience here with having written this book, that so many people really just don't understand the significance of those first 3 to 5 years. They really don't. I mean, they're not trying to be dismissive of it, I think, but they have not heard what they need to hear about it, which is, as you say, this whole need for children to bond. And if they do not make that attachment in those first several years, they really are at a loss for life, because those years are all about learning how to love and learning compassion and empathy and trust. And these are such, they're intangibles, but they're so significant to what makes us human beings and what makes us capable of relating to other, makes us relational people, you know, able to connect with other human beings. So if we don't get that, which of course nobody in daycare is getting this, because you've got this constant turnover in caregivers, and you're learning to love and attach to one, and then boom, she's gone, they bring in another one, you start to do it again, and then boom, she's gone, and then, you know, by the third time, what do you think is happening to the psyches? You know, you're giving up. You're thinking, well, no one's spending enough time with me. Obviously, I'm not worth anybody's time. So that is what's making up their identity. And I don't think people understand this, because where, unless they've researched it or studied it or experienced it by being home with children themselves and seeing it for themselves, where are they going to get this information? So that is so much about why I wrote the book, is to give people information that they're not going to get in the media, and then they can make up their own minds after they've been armed with that knowledge.
One of the great tragedies of our time is the instability of marriage. And marriage, of course, at one time was something that you got into and it was there for your whole life. And but of course, we began to increasingly in our society trivialize marriage. And today there are so many women who have been married. Their husbands have gone off, left them, run off with another woman, or even worse, with another man. And of course, then the woman is stuck with the child and she has to work, and her whole life really is shattered, and the child's life is shattered too. I don't think that most people realize the impact that something like this has on that child.
No, because of course we're taught to believe that anything is, you know, all lifestyles and all circumstances are equal and fine. So we don't want to marginalize the single parent families. But, you know, I have great sympathy for single moms. I can't even wrap my brain around the whole idea of raising my children by myself and knowing that my husband's not going to be home at night or on the weekends to do his part. It's just mind-boggling. But that is why it is so important to focus on how to keep marriages strengthened so that that doesn't happen, rather than just accept this is an inevitability and we must accept it and act like it's just normal and equal to a two-parent family, which it is not. So I, interestingly enough, I'm trying to work on, but I don't have much time these days, but I'm trying to work on a book that focuses on how working motherhood affects marriage. For this very reason, because I do talk about it a little bit in the book, but I don't think enough. So it is a very important point, which goes back to why I said this issue is not about stay-at-home moms versus working moms, which is all you ever hear in the media. The issue is so much larger than this, because it goes to the heart of what you just said, which is how our society is made up now of, you know, not the nuclear family being together, but the single parent scenarios, and you can't really talk about this issue without addressing that as well.
And I think this is one of the great tragedies of our time. And you know, in the black community, about 75% of the children are born out of wedlock mothers.
Yep.
In the white community, it's what, 25%
yep.
or so.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, these kids start out with two strikes against them.
Yeah.
And the mothers are trapped in the same sort of a situation as well. And we're going to be back here in just a moment to discuss more of this. Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if
maybe the government was not giving you the full story. Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, the Rules of Engagement, 2.5 ripping
hours. This is Health Journal.
The story of a government onslaught under a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, the Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or would respond normally. Waco, the Rules of Engagement, is currently unavailable at the regular sources. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In the 1970s, there was a group of Italian immigrants in the small town of Roseto, Pennsylvania, who drew worldwide attention for their unusual cardiovascular health, despite their pasta diets. I recently uncovered the fact that their unusual health was attributed to the precious red wine which they imported from Italy. Today we know this as the French paradox, the fact that the French exhibit greater cardiovascular health despite their fatty diet because of the red wine they drink. Wouldn't it be great to enjoy the health benefits of red wine without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives? Well, now you can with Longevinex, the world's first stabilized red wine molecules preserved in an airtight capsule, just like in a sealed bottle of red wine, equivalent to 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex for healthy aging without the calories and alcohol. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Suzanne Venker. Her book, Seven Myths of Working Mothers. Suzanne, after analyzing this, why has our society changed? Why have our values changed? How did we get into a situation where we are today with the breakdown of the family in many instances, where, of course, a lot of men don't want to accept the responsibility of being husbands, and, of course, a lot of women don't want to accept the responsibility of being mothers. So where did we as a country go wrong?
Well, my personal feeling is that we have really lost our way as far as our concept of what freedom means. In that, you know, freedom used to mean being free from things like tyranny, oppression, and the like. And we have come to mean, or excuse me, it has come to mean to be to have the freedom to do as we please. And so I believe that this idea of, you know, again, as I said before, mothers used to be in the workforce, or have always been the workforce, some. However, they were there for financial reasons, and today that is no longer the case. Today they are seen as being entitled to do this if they choose. And so I liken that to this whole concept of being free, this idea that we are entitled to choose a life that best suits us and our needs as individuals, rather than doing what makes sense for society and, of course, what's right for society, which requires us to think of others before ourselves. So that's why I think that we've, you know, gotten to where we are with this whole thing, because we, you know, human nature is such that, you know, we want to put ourselves first. You know, we are by nature selfish individuals. And if we are allowed to think in those terms, we're going to kind of jump on it. That's how I think this whole thing has happened, because the women's movement, of course, that's exactly what they asked of us 30 or 40 years ago now, is to put women first at the forefront of society, before men, before children, before anything else, and take care of our needs irrespective of those around us. And we jumped on it. And from that, it's just kind of, you know, had a domino effect.
Well, don't you think a lot of this was that somehow you were never be fulfilled just being a mother after all?
Yeah.
You know, that was sort of not a job within itself. The important thing was to succeed in the business world, to make a lot of money, to be able to get ahead, to be at the top of your field. Somehow that would be far more important than simply being a mother.
Right. Now, of course, in fairness to feminists, we have to remember that at the time that Betty Friedan wrote her book, The Feminine Mystique, at that time, certainly culture was very different, and because it was expected that women would immediately get married upon, you know, graduating from college, and settle down, there were of course many women who did not get a chance to, as we like to say, find themselves, or, you know, spend time just within themselves before they've given so much over to a family. And in fairness to them, Betty Friedan did tap into something, and that was that, you know, when you haven't had a chance to explore yourself without focusing on the needs of others, it can be very enticing to have somebody come along and say, hey, you know, what about me? What about you as a woman? And clearly, as I say, she did tap into something. But the bottom line is that, you know, times have changed dramatically, and we are now worlds away from the expectation that you will do nothing else in your life besides mother your children as a woman. And you are certainly entitled to postpone marriage and motherhood, which was not the case then. It was just, you were looked at kind of odd if you postponed it. So since we are worlds away from that, we have to understand that the rules have to change a little bit. Yes, that was good for some women to understand that they didn't have to get married right away if they didn't want to. On the other hand, it's not good and it's not okay to have children and then leave them in the care of other people and go do something else. So we just can't seem to understand the disconnect there, and that there's a very big difference between 40 years ago and today.
And, of course, motherhood's one of the greatest professions in the world, certainly one of the very most rewarding and really the most productive, because you're molding the lives of
right.
those children. And, of course, the child that you work with, the child that you mold, may very well have a tremendous impact on others, impact on society as a whole. And if children don't have mothers, these are such really tragic children, as we see sometimes the orphanages over in Romania, where there are literally hundreds of children who were raised in an orphanage and will be there until they're finally thrust out into society, never with the love, never with the relationship, but mostly never with the security that a child has in the home.
No, but we don't liken that to working mothers. You know, we don't connect the two, that they're similar, but of course they are. I mean, if by working mothers you're talking about, you know, people who are gone 50, 60, 70 hours a week, there really is no difference. We have a difficult time swallowing that and understanding that that's how a child reads that, is that you are leaving them. And in that way, it isn't really any different from being an orphan.
Hold right there.
Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
The Midwest Gift and Fudge House manufactures the best fudge in the world. They've discovered a secret recipe, and it allowed them to actually make the creamiest and most delicious fudge you're going to find anywhere. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we had a little problem there. Anyway, we wanted to get you back to our special guest today. Her name is Suzanne Venker, and we're talking about her book, Seven Myths of the Working Woman, and of course the problem that many women have deciding whether they want to be a professional woman or whether they really want to, of course, to be a mother, and of course they can do lots of things when they're a mother. In fact, you have a wonderful foreword to your book written by Laura Schlesinger, Dr. Laura, and she does a great job of talking about, you know, how her life, we want to talk just a little bit about that, because I thought there was really such a great insight into this woman who's really has had such a profound impact on the thinking of lots of people.
Sure. Well, she does talk in there about, you know, her premise is really the same as mine, which is why she wanted to write the foreword, which is that no one said mothers can't work at all. That's not the point. The point is, whatever it is that you find to do around your primary obligation and responsibility to raising your children is fine. But the problem there is that, of course, most full-time careers, you know, the intense careers anyway, are not going to be doable if you want to raise your children, because you're going to invariably need child care. So she talks in there about how her career, her radio career and or writing career, has been worked around her child's life. Now, you have to remember she also did have one child. Now, if she had had four or five, I'm sure her life would have taken a very different turn. That's basically, you know, I actually talk in the book as well about how I was able to write this book, which I did 3 years ago when I had only one child, interestingly enough, not two, and that, you know, your life can be somewhat smooth at that point because they sleep a lot when they're young, and you can have kind of a scheduled day there where they have a nap. And of course I wrote most of this after she went to bed at night. So now I'm trying to work on the second book as I suggested, and you know, I get maybe 30 minutes in a day. It's just ridiculously slow. I don't know how I'm going to do it, if I'm going to do it, because I now have two children and they're non-school age. And that's one of the points of the book, is that they're, you know, you have these ebbs and flows to motherhood and these pockets of time that will exist throughout your career at home with children. And of course when they enter school, you're going to be opened up there time-wise in a big way, but until that time comes your time is really not your own.
Of course, but you know, when of course even they're in school, then you got to take them for the music lessons or dance lessons,
that's right.
Or all the sporting activities. There are so many demands on a mother.
There really are, and people think that, and I didn't mean to suggest that all of a sudden you have all this time on your hands with your children in school, because in fact, you don't, number one, and second of all, there are many women who actually have been working, believe it or not, when their children are young and they've used daycare, and then they came home after their children entered school, because what they thought was the case was actually the reverse, because the older they got, the more difficult it became to delegate the work that you need to do at that point to other people, because it's done in such a piecemeal way. You know, it's hard to hire somebody to be around before school and after school, and of course to have that influence that you want to have as far as your value system goes. You just can't delegate that to other people. So women have come home only after their children are in school. So I didn't mean to suggest that all of a sudden you've got all this time, but I'm just pointing out that it's just not the same as the first 5 years when you know, it's really 24/7. You have a little bit of a reprieve when they're in school. So I talk about the seasons of motherhood, and just to go back to your question, I think that's what Dr. Laura's point was in the foreword.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you'd like to, of course, to make a comment on this, this is, of course, a woman's explanation of why she thinks motherhood is so important and why she's turned her back on many of these feminist ideas, you know, that, my goodness, we got to be out there competing to do something she thinks is vitally important. And that is raising her children. An old-fashioned idea, and it's a shame people have to write a book on this, and yet, of course, somebody has to begin saying, maybe we've been following the wrong path for a long, long time. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Give us a call. We'd like to know what you think about this revolutionary idea that mothers should be mothers. Well, Suzanne, have you had any criticism at all of your taking this stand?
Oh, my, yes. but interestingly enough, the majority of it has been via the media. It's been an interesting ride. I mean, there have been, I've had kind of reaction from even local people here regarding how retro this idea is and how, you know, I'm sending women back to the dark ages. I had one man even compare me to a Saudi Arabian's view of women. Really quite shocking. But, of course, that's the exception, not the rule. And, of course, those people have not read the book. So it just goes to the heart, though, of how deeply embedded this issue is in people's hearts and souls and how they've really grabbed this idea of freedom, as I mentioned before, as being, you know, this meaning that you have these rights as women to do as you please, regardless of who gets hurt, and that's what's so concerning to me. The vast majority of people, however, have been very receptive, and I feel that more than anything, I've tapped into something that people are very uncomfortable saying aloud, for all the obvious PC reasons, but are very grateful for the book.
One of the things I really thought was so interesting in your book was the impact that you felt that the media has on how we feel about things. And, of course, earlier we talked about that CBS program with Leslie Stahl, horrified that these women would be doing the unthinkable thing they'd be giving up their careers and raising their children. And yet, of course, the media really shapes so much of what we believe and how we think, and has such a profound impact, I'm sure, on many, many people, on many men, on many women, and has changed our whole sense of values away from what it was to almost as if somebody was designing, was changing the very structure of our society.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's just remarkable how powerful they are, and yet it's so important to understand that they are the minority. They are the minority, and yet they appear to represent the trend and the way that, you know, if you're progressive and you want to think the way everybody else does and be popular and whatnot, you're going to think the way they do. And yet the vast majority of people don't share those beliefs. And of course, this is represented best in the book, you know, Bernard Goldberg wrote, called Bias, which was back in 2000, where he laid out the issue of media bias, and he even spent an entire chapter talking about this very issue, and he titles it "The Most Important Story You Never Saw on TV," and that story has to do with what has happened to our children today as a result of this mass exodus of mothers from the workforce. But you're not going to hear, you know, Katie Couric or Leslie Stahl or whomever say this out loud, because, of course, that would refute not only what they have chosen for themselves, but also what all their coworkers have done. And so it's just simply too tall of an order for them to be able to address.
And, of course, really, I thought this was really such an important point that you brought out in the book, the fact that the media has changed our culture, because I agree with you totally. I don't think most people believe the way the media does, and yet, of course, when everybody, it appears, is going one direction, it's awfully hard to stand up and say, hey, that's not right. And it actually may be that everybody agrees with you, but they all feel so isolated because all the other media pundits, these attractive women who are getting these fabulous salaries, are saying one thing, and yet our gut feeling is, that's wrong. Mothers ought to be at the home. Mothers ought to be raising children. That's the greatest profession in the world.
Well, and not only that, but, you know, you flip on the TV morning after morning after morning, and it's so easy to hear them discuss, because it happens all the time, some issue that's going on with children, like obesity, for example. And they'll have these experts on to talk about all the reasons why children are obese today. And they'll discuss it and discuss it and discuss it. But the one thing they'll never say is that this has anything to do with the fact that mothers are not home anymore, and our lifestyles have changed so dramatically that people aren't taking the time to make sure that their kids are eating well, eating right, exercising, overseeing this area of our children's lives so that they do not end up alone in front of the TV with a bag of Cheetos. Well, we don't want to say this, but why do you think it's happening? And it's just maddening for all these women who are out there doing the work of motherhood to have to flip on the TV and not hear the truth. It's just maddening, and that's so much why, so much of the reason why I wrote this book.
Well, how can people get hold of a copy of your book, The 7 Myths of Working Mothers? Because, you know, Spence does a great job putting books out. It's a hardbound book. It's not a terribly long book. What is it, a couple hundred pages?
No, it's very, very short.
172 pages, yeah, including the end chapters, but the end references. But how can they get your book to read it? A mother sitting out there at home wondering, is this what I should really be doing? I think would be enthralled. In fact, I think you should be encouraged, really, by reading the book. So how would, maybe a husband could get the book for his wife. So how would they go about doing that?
Well, various ways. The major two chains, Borders and Barnes & Noble, should have it. If they don't, they can certainly order it. Or if you're computer savvy, there's Amazon.com or SpencePublishing.com, S-P-E-N-C-E Publishing.com. There's also a phone number. Do you have that?
No, well, it's, why don't you go ahead
and get it? Well, I'll
look it up here.
Okay, I think it's 888-773-6782. And that's the 800 number for directly to the publishing company.
That's 1-888-773-6782.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, if you're a husband out there and you have a wife at home who's looking after the children, what you really want to do is buy her a copy of the book, 1-888-773-6782. Spence Pub, as you can remember, yeah. S-P-E-N-C, or S-P-E-N, Pub, Spence Pub, or 1-888-773-6782. And it's a delightful book because, you know, it just says what things that are so self-evident, they shouldn't even have to be said, but the trouble is, nobody else is saying them. Well, of course, you've got a husband who's really very, very supportive of your being home, don't you?
I do, and I just could not be more fortunate for the husband that I have. There's just no question about it. I can't say that he was necessarily in my camp at the get-go. Not that he wasn't, but I don't think he certainly didn't have the passion that I did, but he now does, to the point where I'd almost say he's even more into it than I am, if that's possible.
You mean as far as having the family and you're staying?
Well, no, I mean, no, as far as getting the issue out. As far as discussing it vocally, I mean, as far as being out there, as far as being an author, no, he's not more into having me at home kind of a thing. But as far as you know, my having chosen to be vocal about this, I mean, because you know, you put yourself out there and your life changes. There's no question about it. I mean, he's been affected by my having written this book, and you know, it goes to the whole political nature of what you are and aren't supposed to say, and you know, whether. You know, whether, let's just say you learn who your friends are, because if somebody doesn't like you or support you for what you've done, then that tells you a lot. And he's had to deal with that. And so for that, I'm grateful.
Well, of course, this is really something that you can do as a mother. You can write a book at home. And of course, in between the all the other things the mother has to do, you know, maybe you're only getting maybe 30 minutes or an hour in a day, but eventually, well, you'll get through your next book, I'm sure.
I hope so. Well, the first time it was just very, it was a lot easier because I committed to doing it in X amount of months, and I did it every night. After she went to bed, and as you say, as far as his being supportive, that required, and I talked about this in the book, that required his not seeing me for 9 months. Because, you know, what do you hopefully do in the evening when you're married and your children are in bed? You hopefully spend a little time with your spouse, and I didn't for a number of months in order to get this book out. And I discussed that with him ahead of time, and he was amenable to that, so thank God for him.
You obviously have a very understanding husband, but I think it's really so important. I think that the family is the basic unit of society. And when the family breaks down, why, the basic structure of society begins to break down, and the government breaks down, and of course, this tragically, we haven't got to the point where the government is breaking down today, but we have got to the point of view where certainly the marriage covenant is broken down all across America, and certainly perhaps more markedly in the black community than the white community. But of course, at one time, before we started interfering with people's lives, the black community was very, very strong, and there was a man and a father and a wife, and then of course we came in, we were going to liberate them, and boy, we did a great job. And today, why, they're so much worse off in many respects, as far as the family, as far as the family life within the black community. But the same problems are in the white community. Mm-hmm. If we don't do something about it, we're going to be just as bad in the white community as in the black community one of these days. Well, we've got just a couple of minutes here before we've got to let you go. What's the message you would like to leave with our listeners today?
Well, basically, well, several things. One is to, I urge people, not just women, men and women, this is an issue for men and women, to think independently and to do what they can to ignore, do the best that they can, I guess I should say, to ignore the voices around them, particularly those in the media, but even your neighbors and your family and your friends, and think about this issue from an entirely different perspective. And that is that it doesn't have anything to do with what women are capable of outside the home. It doesn't have anything to do with our rights as parents or individuals. It has to do with putting children at the forefront when we have them of our lives and understanding what it is that they need from us in order to become confident, healthy, happy, intelligent human beings. And that requires a vast amount of work. And to a child, the only way you can spell the word love is through time. And that time translates to them as their feeling worthy of being loved, and that will carry them for the rest of their lives. And if we could understand that and appreciate that, rather than thinking that they will be just as fine by having this slew of caregivers coming in and out of their lives, we will be that much better off in raising healthy families.
I agree with you totally. Well, Suzanne, thank you so very much for being with us. Our guest has been Suzanne Benker. Her book, Seven Myths of Working Mothers. You don't have a website or anything you'd like to get out to you?
No, I don't.
All right,
just
fine.
Sense, yeah.
Well, we'll look forward to your next book when it comes
thank
out.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so very much for being with us.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was Suzanne Benker. We're talking about her book. And a unique idea. The mothers ought to stay home and raise their children. And of course, that doesn't mean they can't be productive in many ways. And maybe when their child is grown, they can go back in the business world. But for the time that they're raising their children, that child needs them.
We have a bombing video today on the Oklahoma City bombing. It's called Oklahoma, What Really Happened. And of course, it consists of a lot of never-before-seen video footage. Now, it was seen in Oklahoma City immediately following the bombing of the Murrah Building, but blacked out across America. And in this footage, you're going to see the commentators talking about the other bombs that were in the building at the time of the initial bombing. We're told, of course, that Timothy McVeigh acted independently, and we're told many things by the media, but wherein does the truth lie? Oklahoma City, What Really Happened, it will give you the opportunity to see long suppressed video footage of what really transpired. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Oklahoma City, What Really Happened.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just point out the reason that we have the problems we have with the family today. And that has been organized, orchestrated, coordinated effort to destroy the American family. It has been coordinated by Planned Parenthood. In fact, you can go back and you can actually read. We are going to be giving a talk on this weekend. In October of 1970, the Family Planning Perspective published an article in their magazine, published right in Santa Cruz as part of Planned Parenthood, talking about how they were going to control the population. They were going to tax married couples more. They were going to do everything they could to get women working. They were going to want to promote chronic depression. They were going to want to encourage homosexuality. They were going to put things in the drinking water that would decrease fertility. Everything to control population. The last thing you wanted was a normal, healthy family. Why? Well, of course, most people think that this really was all about population control because they really don't understand. Of course, part of it was population control, but part of it was organized evil. Margaret Sanger, who formed Planned Parenthood, was deeply involved with theosophy, which is, of course, founded in the occult and in Satanism. And when you understand that, you understand why there was a conscious effort to destroy the family. Why? Because God ordained the family, and he created men and women, and they were to be partners, and they were, of course, to be fruitful and multiply. And that, of course, is God's plan. And, of course, the evil one, the prince of this world, has done everything he could to disrupt that plan. And you may think this is a simplistic approach to it. But when you read and study, and if you attend our program this coming Saturday, well, you're going to learn a lot more about this diabolical plan to destroy the family, to destroy America. So understand that what we see are the symptoms, what we see are the signs, but we have to understand the real cause behind this, organized evil. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you out across America who listen to our programs, who believe that there really is a problem. And if you do, why, we would love to have you consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do. 5 hours a day. reaching people by radio and by shortwave, by the internet, by satellite, and gradually our listening audience is expanding, and more people are learning about the true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're engaged. If you have not read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you really need to get the book, or get the video, or get the book and the video and the audio tape as this Brotherhood of Darkness special, because it will give you the overview of what's going on. There really are secret societies. They're working in America today. We have over 2 million Masons. They've sworn an oath to the great architect of the universe. And who is that? Well, the average Mason probably thinks it's their God, but it isn't. It is Lucifer himself. And if you want to verify this, you can, of course, read my book and then begin getting the sources of reference from Masonic literature, and we'll help you get it if you can't get it through regular channels. The last thing that they want is for the average person, or even for the average Mason, to understand what's really going on. And then you have, of course, your Skull and Bones organization. You have your Theosophy. Go up on the web and look up Theosophy. Look up the Rosicrucians. Look up the Process Church of the Final Judgment. Look up Anton LaVey. Look up Manly P. Hall. You'll find tens of thousands of sites on, well, Anton LaVey, I think he's only got about 8,000 sites. He was a piker. Of course, we focused our attention on Anton LaVey, so we wouldn't really understand the true nature of this Luciferian conspiracy we face. So we hope that many of you will get our literature. If you'd like a free copy of our catalog, in fact, my last newsletter, my October newsletter, goes into the secret society that was established in America in 1640 by Sir Francis Bacon. We use as our source of reference a man who was a lifelong Satanist. But he's writing to other Satanists, and the average person will never read his books. But if you'd like a free copy of our October newsletter, which goes into the background of the satanic movement in America, the First Bank of the United States, the Second Bank of the United States, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and of course we hope you want to subscribe to the newsletter, but we're glad to send you a free copy. Hopefully you can read it, and of course if you have a computer, you can go up on the internet at radioliberty.com, and you can pull our programs down. They're up posted there. All of our newsletters are posted there. Our programs are archived for several weeks after they're given. And of course, your job is to tell other people about our internet site. Your job is to tell them about our shortwave programs. And incidentally, they have done it again as far as our shortwave is concerned. And of course, they didn't tell us until the last day they were changing it. Our afternoon program is heard at 7.535. That's 7.535. Our evening program is heard on Angel 1 at 7.535. On Angel 2, the first hour at 5.835. The second hour at 5.970. That's the first hour at 5.835. That is 8 to 9 here on the West Coast, 11 to midnight on the East Coast. The second hour at 5.970. So if you have difficulty getting us, why, of course, we hope that you will call our number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Tell others about our shortwave programs. Tell them about our website. Get people involved, because, it was Thomas Jefferson who said if any people believe that they can exist both ignorant and free in a state of civilization, they expect what never was and never will be. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye. And may the Lord be with you.